Okay. I'll move to item number 12, and we can hear from Mr. Wolf, our State Water Resources Control Board liaison.
Good morning. For the reporter, I'm Gary Wolf, member of the State Water Resources Control Board. And I'm glad to give you an update on some of the things that are going on at the State Board. I want to admit up front, though, that I'm not entirely certain what items in our work program are most of interest to you. So I picked five things that I thought would be of interest. But over time, feel free to email me or call me to tell me what sorts of things you want to hear about in these reports, and I'll prepare some information on that for you. The five things I selected this time begin with the Numeric Effluent Limits Expert Panel, which reported to us a few months back on whether numeric effluent limits were feasible or not in stormwater permits. And we held a hearing on August 31st, and the we held three hearings, actually. And then the submittal deadline for written comments subsequent to those hearings was September 1st. So we have received a large volume of written comments on the numeric effluents expert panel. The next step is to assimilate those comments, and the two lead board members for stormwater, Jerry Secundi and myself, will be sitting down with staff to go over those comments and to make some input about how we might proceed next. Second item I thought might be of interest is the areas of special biological significance. We held several hearings on that as well. One of those hearings was held here in Monterey on August 15th, and I was present. An interesting thing that came out of the hearing was that many people thought that we were promulgating a new policy, new restrictions on discharges into the ocean, into these areas of special biological significance. That's not actually the case. There already is a policy. The California Ocean Plan says that discharges of waste into these areas are prohibited. It also says that you can get an exception under special conditions. But the special conditions have never been very well defined. So the document that is out for public review now is a document which provides guidelines for what those special conditions would be and how one would go about getting an exception for discharge into an area of special biological significance. As I phrased it at the hearing, we're in essence creating the process for regulatory relief from an existing blanket prohibition. We're not creating a new prohibition. And this is very important to get through, you know, to people who are concerned about this. Third point, the 316B regulations that were discussed yesterday with respect to Moss Landing and these desalination facilities. We've been holding hearings with respect to whether the state should simply adopt the federal regulations or adopt something more stringent. The hearings have been held. The last hearing was on August 31st. The written comment deadline is September 15th. And once again, after written comments are submitted and staff summarizes them, the board members who are the lead for that item will sit down and talk with staff about where perhaps we should go next. Jerry Secundi and I are again the leads for that item. Fourth, the 303D list revision. This is the impaired waters list for the state, the list of waters for which TMDLs need to be prepared. The revised list will be released for public review fairly soon, within the next couple weeks, and we anticipate hearing it at the State Board on October 25th. We understand that it will probably be a lengthy hearing. There will be many comments. There are currently 1,883 impaired waters listed in the state of California. The proposal will probably increase the total number of impaired waters. There will be some delistings and some new listings, but the net effect is going to increase the number of TMDLs that are required over time if the proposed list is in fact adopted. And final point I wanted to make is that we have our Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting coming up on October 30th and 31st. I hope to see all of you there. If you can't make it, that's certainly understandable, but if you can, they've become very interesting meetings the last couple of meetings. I've been to the last two as a member of the San Francisco Bay Regional Board, and I thought they were much better than the previous Water Quality Coordinating Committee meetings. So we're getting better, and if you've had any bad experiences in the past, put them out of your mind. It's a new show. And, in fact, on Monday, the chairs of the boards will be meeting to discuss the agenda for the next Water Quality Coordinating Committee, because we wanted to make sure that the agenda addresses the needs of the regional boards as the regional boards see those needs, not necessarily as we see those needs. Any questions?
Dr. Hunter.
Thank you, and I appreciate the five items that you selected, some of which I was aware of and others are new to me, so that's great. Yeah. I'm curious about, I think it's AB 885, the septic program.
Yes.
And I know Jerry had been reporting to us, and the last I recall, we were expecting to see something coming online by fall, but I think that may be postponed to January.
That's correct. I'm not close to that particular program. My understanding is that staff chose to delay it a while to work out some concerns that the rural counties have raised, or at least to attempt to work them out before coming public with a proposal.
Will they, the rural counties, how are they communicating their concerns? I mean, is there some outreach going on already, or what's initiating that?
As I understand it, there were written comments submitted, and okay. the request by staff to take a little longer was not for the purpose of holding additional outreach meetings or stakeholder meetings, but was for the purpose of them internally figuring out the best way to respond to all of the comments that were submitted. But in particular, the hardest set of comments are those associated with cost, and these come from the rural counties. You know, basically saying, you know, well-functioning septic systems cause nitrate levels to increase over time. And that raises a whole set of issues having to do with the non-degradation policy and what is in the best interest of the people of the state and so forth. So there are issues, you know, related to cost and the non-degradation policy the staff wanted more time to work on.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, on the ASBS document you were referring to?
Yes.
On the how to apply for an exception.
Yes.
Is that available on the State Water Board website?
It is.
Okay, thanks.
It is. And it's in the form of an initial proposal for CEQA scoping purposes, because we're going to take that proposal and alternatives to the proposal through a CEQA review process.
Dr. Fred.
Again, thank you so much for coming down and spending this much time with us. Sure. Regarding the 316B issue, has the State Board given some thought, I'm sure it came up in hearings, to habitat enhancement types of mitigation evaluation, the idea that you look at the costs of habitat enhancement as the figure that you have to use as mitigation. This was something that was of controversy as EPA was developing the guidelines. EPA tiptoed up to the to this method, looked at it, and then back down, saying we don't know enough about how it would work. Some economists, some environmental economists, think that this is a very promising way to try to cost out the mitigations from these kinds of projects. Has this come up at all in your hearings? Is the board looking at it?
Well, I was not at the hearing on 316B. There was one hearing.
Ah, okay.
I was not at the hearing.
All right.
So I don't know whether it came up in the hearing. I'm not sure I'm understanding the question.
So usually the way that environmental economists, I'm sure you know, they'll do valuation studies. They'll look at trophic kinds of cascades and cost those out.
Right. Right.
In the habitat enhancement method, what you're going to do is you're going to say, well, we can't put a value on all these species. Instead, we'll cost out what it would take to restore the habitat, to bring it up to productivity, productive levels, and so on. So it's really a cost-based approach.
I believe that the staff proposal was to adopt the federal regulations as written with one or two changes. And the one that I remember was that the benefit cost provision, so they're prescriptive standards. Thou shalt do these things unless. And one of the unlesses was that you could calculate for your power plant that the benefits of following the prescriptive standards were less than the costs. That is, doing the prescriptive standards wasn't worth it to the public under a benefit-cost analysis. I believe the staff proposal excluded that. That is, they were proposing to be more stringent than the federal regulations and not to allow a benefit cost exception. So that may be partially in response to your question. Now, there's also a cost-cost comparison that's embedded in the federal regulations, where you compare the cost of doing one thing against another.
Yeah, it's not cost-cost.
Okay, it was benefit cost, and the proposal that was put out was to not allow benefit cost exceptions.
Okay.
I think I can actually answer your
question.
Okay,
thanks.
The staff proposal did address that. The staff proposal is more stringent than the federal regulations in that the federal regulations allow a range of the performance standard is a range from 60 to 90, and the staff proposal is to push power plants up to the 90% reduction of entrainment, and that has to be, in most cases, they're saying it's going to have to be by technology as opposed to restoration measures. But for the extra 10% and for those cases where more than 10% can be, the compliance can be through restoration measures, they actually do specify, I think it's habitat production foregone. It's one of the HEA type methods as being the required analysis.
That's correct. It's not a cost measure or benefit measure at all. It's a habitat foregone.
Right. Right.
So I didn't know that's what you were asking.
Well, yeah, but in that habitat foregone, you have to have at some point you have to put a dollar figure on what it costs.
No, it's just a cost. I mean, the way the staff proposal works is that if you don't mitigate, if you need to mitigate off-site for a certain percentage, then the way you calculate how much mitigation you do off-site is on a habitat, the amount of habitat needed to support the larvae, et cetera, the biology.
So you're saying staff,
regardless of cost.
So staff is supporting that.
That's what was proposed, yes.
Oh, okay. That would be a significant change.
Yes, but the closing date for written comments is September 15th, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, yes. Thank you very much.
And then in terms of processes, I understand it, the point that they're at is the scoping document. So they're looking at all these comments, and then they're going to put out a formal proposal for board adoption. So there's a September 15th comment cutoff on the scoping document, and then there'll be another proposal with another formal comment period. And Dominic Gregorio said recently that they're hoping to put out that proposal early next year.
Obviously, we want to see that as soon as possible. And thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Jeffries.
I just have one comment, Gary, is the water quality meeting is scheduled for October 31st, which is Halloween. Is that any underlying significant?
There is, yes.
The costume party.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could close with a humorous remark, too, which is that I'll need to leave about 10 o'clock. I have a plane to catch. But whoever is speaking at the moment that I leave, don't take it personally.
Okay.
One other follow-up item to Dr. Hunter's question about AB 85 on septic system regulations. We just sent a comment letter to the State Board, I think it was Wednesday, maybe it was Thursday morning, yeah. And we're going to be providing copies for you.
Okay, thank you very much, Gary. All right, I see Mr. Hayashi has arrived. Good morning.